Welcome to Disrupt. I'm Amy Baxter with Home Healthcare News. Today, we're presenting a conversation with Randy Klein, the new CEO of Home Team. Before we dive in, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase, whose powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. Home Team is a New York-based home care company that raised nearly $44 million in venture funding since the company launched in 2013. The provider operates in New York City and has recently undergone a bit of an overhaul when it comes to the business model. After shifting from a private duty care model to one that takes care of the Medicare-Medicaid dual eligibles and a number of shifts at the executive level, Home Team is still looking to make a mark on the industry. I spoke with Klein about Home Team's tech-forward approach and its classification as a disruptor in the space. We also geek out about the financing incentives in place in the current and future payment systems. So, hi, Randy. Thanks so much for joining Disrupt. And we're excited to have you on the podcast. So, you've been with Home Team for about an entire month now. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm actually just into my sixth week now.
Okay, great. So before we get into your background, what are your first impressions of Home Team? How are you settling into a new role?
I'm loving it. It's a great team, very mission motivated, focused on providing great experiences for caregivers, great outcomes for patients, and you know, really to the tune of the podcast here, disrupting healthcare in a favorable way.
Very cool. So has anything surprised you so far in the first 6 weeks?
Yeah, I think it's the thing that surprised me the most is the engagement of our caregivers. When I started and they sent the announcement out about my joining the company, it went out to all the staff, including the caregivers themselves. And I had, no joke, dozens of responses from frontline caregivers. They are, in fact, you know, we're living up to our promise there. We are one team from the top to the bottom.
Very cool. Okay, great. Well, before we dive a little bit more into Home Team, I'd actually love to hear about where you got your start, either in healthcare, but I'd love to hear, you know, where'd you start your career at the very beginning?
Yeah, sure. So I graduated from a little school called The Ohio State University, went to work for a consulting firm that at that point in time was Anderson Consulting. It became Accenture, and I was focused on something completely unhealthcare related. I was doing financial services post-merger integration work and you know, really sexy ERP implementations. So in 2001, the tech bust happened. Lots was going on at Anderson Consulting. My staffing opportunities would have led me to go to you know, California, Georgia, Germany. And I was actually following my then-girlfriend, now wife, to New York, where she was pursuing a PhD. And healthcare was hiring. So I went to work for Visiting Nurse Service of New York. And you know, interestingly enough, my first healthcare job was actually implementing value-based care for Visiting Nurse Service of New York. They were implementing something called Medicare PPS, the prospective payment system, which was an episodic payment for skilled home healthcare, still in existence today. And that was my first foray into healthcare as a professional. I went from there to help stand up VNSNY Choice Medicare, which is the Medicare Advantage plan that VNSNY offers. That was my first time on the plan side as a professional. And then from that into a national consulting role with a company that's now part of Optum. Then back to the health plan world, working for Elder Plan, where I worked with the managed long-term care and the Medicare Advantage side. Help combine them and expand them into a statewide plan. Then I tried my hand at something entrepreneurial for the first time. Went to work for a company called Complex Care Solutions, an early stage company that you know, focused on using in-home supports and services to reduce medical expenses for chronically ill individuals and those that were coming out of the home. My computer just froze here. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you. It was getting a little like glitchy soundy, but I think it's still okay.
Okay. Yeah. So then I went to work for Complex Care Solutions as their president, helped them enter the managed long-term care space, took them from a regional to more of a national player. Then over to Remedy doing Episodes of Care, stood up their national networks again, joined them pretty early on when they were mostly just in the Northeast, and stood up coast to coast, actually all the way out to Hawaii, stood up networks for them. And Home Team found me over the winter. I'd been following them for a while. I really liked the Home Team story and this notion of using technology and enabled caregivers to connect the home to the delivery system. It's something that I've seen as broken for a long time. And this approach to it's going to work, because if you can get a caregiver engaged, if you can get that data out of the home and get it actionable, which is in fact what we are doing, it will result in the improvements that avoided hospitalizations and avoided ER and better outcome, better quality of life that the system, patients, families that we all desire.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it sounds like it's been an interesting road to get to Home Team. So back with VNSNY, how long were you working there? It sounds like you had a couple different roles.
Yeah, I was there for almost 7 years. So came in on that internal consulting role and then moved through a variety of roles during my time there, ultimately ending up running the service operations for the health plan.
Mm-hmm. How has maybe that experience helped you so far at Home Team?
So that experience has been foundational. And actually, the consulting experience is also foundational. Understanding how a health plan thinks about home care and understanding how home care thinks about itself, those two components are in fact, probably the key elements. And then being able to take a consultative approach to working with the delivery system, payers, and providers are probably the key elements that, influence how I work today. Specifically, home care has known for a very long time the potential that it holds to improve outcomes. And it's also known for a very long time that, the last mile, that condition of what's happening in the home in real time has been one of the hardest to bridge, in large part because of some screwy financing in the delivery system. So home care as an industry has been looking to do this for as long as I've been involved with it. At the same point in time, health plans are there's a perception of health plans out there that I think may not be fully accurate, which is that they're only focused on dollars and denials. There's, that movie John Q, which I think creates health plans as a villain. Health plans are there to organize the delivery system. They are, in fact, very focused on quality, the ones I've been affiliated with, at least. And they're looking for ways to do it responsibly and from a data-driven approach. So knowing that, health plans, their goal is to create, high quality, cost-effective care delivery. It makes it easier for me to be able to walk into a health plan or walk into a subcapitated provider and have a meaningful conversation with them about how we can actually help them in their business to collaborate in the service of patient care.
Mm-hmm. How well do you think the industry does as a whole? Sorry, are you getting an echo here?
I am not.
Okay. Maybe it went away. I'll ask again, but how well do you think the industry does as a whole in terms of thinking like a plan? Do you think they could do a good job, that it's something that most home care agencies need to work on, is kind of having that mentality of what does a plan need from me?
Yeah. I don't know that I can answer that question well. Mm-hmm. Home care is a very fragmented industry. There's something like 13,000 home care agencies out there. So I suspect there's a very wide range of views and beliefs out there. I can only speak to the ones that I've been associated with, and the ones that I've been associated with have had that type of view.
Mm-hmm. Right. So more recently, you were with Remedy Partners. Can you tell us a little bit more about your work there?
Sure. So I came in as the general manager for the BPCI program with responsibility for building out their what's called field operations, basically the individuals that worked with the hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, and home health agencies, and even physicians that were participating in the BPCI program. A really wonderful experience, because I got to see the delivery system across the country. And during the course of it, we set up programs in 45 states, you know, something like $5 billion of program, built out, you know, hundreds of networks. I don't remember the total number, but it was like 500 or so SNF networks, skilled nursing facility networks, 300 or so home health networks. And I think those are still growing. And again, got to see what some of the commonalities and differences were across the country. You know, the axiom that all healthcare is local, I think has a lot of truth, but maybe not as much truth as, you know, some might give it credence. So healthcare is very, very localized in terms of delivery, but the way that healthcare is actually delivered, you can have scale elements that you build into it. So one of the things that, that Remedy had done very well was, and again, this was my role within it, was figure out how to work between hospitals and their post-acute system. Those are things that can scale because the type of information that, that a hospital and a skilled nursing facility and a home health agency need is pretty similar. It's how do the patients actually access those systems that are different. Mm-hmm. Again, that's the type of thing that's going to be really useful to me here. And, you know, understanding how to rapidly scale up, clearly a big part of what we're doing. And then understanding how to create a common language for what we're doing with the payers and providers in the markets that we're serving is also going to be an important feature.
Mm-hmm. Right. Did you get much experience with the dual eligible patient population?
Very much. Yeah.
Okay.
So I've been working with dual eligibles, again, since before that was a term. Dual eligible SNP started with the Medicare Modernization Act. Before that, there was always obviously duals, but there was lots of terms for it. And I'm pretty sure it was Medicare Modernization Act. And I was part of when I set VNS&Y Choice Medicare, we were one of the first dual eligible SNPs out there. And Elder Plan stood up a dual eligible SNP as well as a fully integrated SNP. You know, so I've worked with, in and around dual eligibles for the entirety of my career in healthcare. And it's one of those things where, again, understanding healthcare finance, which might be one of the most boring things that somebody can be into. So like I can geek out on that for a long time. I think it's fascinating and really needs to be fixed, which I guess is probably why I'm in my role among other parts. But there's some really screwy incentives between Medicare and Medicaid. Dual eligibility is a social condition. It's not a medical one. And it's something that the delivery system and the regulators can work together to fix and have been working together to fix. And again, our approach to this at home team, I think, fits squarely within it. If you look at dual eligibles, they are some of the highest utilizers of unnecessary care. They are the ones that are experiencing that fragmented system in some of the worst ways, which is interesting because it's a social condition, not a medical one. Mm-hmm. A big part of that. What's that?
How do you explain that? The age and
I explain that in terms of healthcare finance. So, you know, when you're talking about the Medicaid side of dual eligibility, it's driven by, you know, poverty. It's not driven by anything else, but that poverty can be caused by sickness. It can be caused by other things too. So people will become dual eligibles for a variety of reasons, but once they get there, they now have two payers. And those payers do not necessarily have the same incentives and they do not necessarily play well together. So by way of reference, Medicare does not cover non-medical home care in its traditional benefit. It just made that change for 2019 as a supplemental benefit in health plans. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you may have heard me talk about is how that's going to be a really, it's a great opportunity for health plans to start to think about this differently. But because of that, if you're a Medicare plan and you want to pay for aid services at home, or if you're traditional Medicare and you want to pay for aid services at home for a patient, because you know that that's going to keep them stable, healthy, or whatever, you actually don't have the ability to do that. Conversely, if you're a Medicaid plan and you don't have the medical risk on the other side of it, and again, if I'm in the deep end of the pool on this, just stop me because I spent way too much time thinking about this.
It's okay.
If you're a Medicaid plan and you don't have the medical risk, so when I say medical, I mean hospital and doctor, and when I say long-term care supports and services, I mean, you know, home health care, non-skilled home health care, long-term placement in skilled nursing facilities, home environmental modification, things like that. Again, all these wonderful tools that a medical provider can use to improve medical outcomes, it's actually not available to you. They have to be on the Medicaid benefit, and you don't get the benefit for that. So, you know, I've been on that side of it. I've been a Medicaid managed long-term care, partially capitated payer, really long thing there in terms of a title, but essentially a plan that only manages the long-term care supports and services component.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The services that we were providing for that were creating medical savings that we did not benefit from. So here's how screwy the incentives get. If mm-hmm. you're one of those type of plans, your incentive is actually for the patient to have services paid for by Medicare because they're not your financial risk. Does that make sense? So it's a broken incentive. Nobody wants to do that, but that's the financial incentive. You want to find somebody else to pay for those services. So dual eligibles end up in a spin cycle related to that type of screwed up incentive. It gets far worse than that. When you start talking about cost sharing on services, you talk about, you know, payers and providers and the type of contracts that exist there. It's where the system breaks down, pretty significantly. And there's lots of thinking that's been done on this. I feel this is one of those problems that we will solve, and we're going to be Home Team's going to be a part of solving it. So
yeah, that's my next question. What is the upside for Home Team? Because this has been, you know, the new sort of patient population focus for you guys.
Yeah, and again, Home Team has been servicing this population now for, we're a very new company, but we've been servicing this company, this population for over a year. The upside for Home Team is that our services, our caregivers and the care management team that we support them with and the technology that enables them to perform are focused on using non-medical home care to reduce potentially avoidable medical expenses. Now, it's funny because we didn't set out to do that. That wasn't our goal at the outset. When we were started, our goal was to create a great experience for patients and providers, caregivers. Now, the funny part about that is how do you create a great experience for a care recipient and for their caregiver? Mm-hmm. Well, implicit in that means that they cannot be fearful of going to the hospital every day, right? They have to have the ability to focus on the things that are important in their life. They have to have the ability to say, hey, you know, I'd really like to be able to go to the park today. I have a 101-year-old grandmother who has worked with the same caregiver for the better part of 16 years. She actually hasn't had a hospitalization in eight. Her caregiver, a woman by the name of Gloria, actually took my grandmother to the mall over the weekend for Chinese food. Sounds like a little thing, and it is a little thing, but it was something that was enabled by, you know, a focus on giving her, you know, quality of life as opposed to lots and lots of medical interventions. And it's resulted in, you know, for her, especially for you know, someone of her age and the medical complexity that she had, what a great experience. 8 years without an admission. But that's something that should be available to many more people. So from the dual's perspective, and my grandmother is a dual eligible. I should have mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
So from a dual's perspective, if you are using the right set of services in the home and in the community, and again, another article that just came out that further validates this was in the New England Journal of Medicine in the most recent issue. Those type of low-cost services focused on the patient's goals, or what does the patient want, will enable very significant savings on the medical side. And that's what we're doing at Home Team. We're making that possible. We've got caregivers who are working in a technology platform that identifies deviations from a medical baseline, which allows for our clinicians to immediately trigger responses to prevent, you know, simple things from becoming crises. And when crises do occur, we act to them timely so that they don't become tragedies. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you know, that initial promise of the organization that, you know, we're going to focus on creating these great experiences for the patients and the caregivers, we are in fact doing that. So we didn't set out to, you know, save the delivery system a ton of money. We discovered that our services, in fact, are doing that. And now we're, you know, focused on working with payers and providers to allow them to access what we've innovated.
So how has an experience like that, you know, just that boosting the quality of life, how has that, I guess, what sort of impact has that had on you now leading a non-medical home care company?
From what perspective?
You know, I'm trying to appeal to your emotional side here. just because I didn't necessarily come into healthcare with a personal experience. I think a lot of people, they start, you know, they come into home care because it happened to their family and they saw a problem that they thought they could solve from whatever end of the spectrum of the industry. So having that experience and now being in charge of home team, just sort of what impact has it had on you, if it not being the financial aspect of it?
So I feel great about it. And what I would say is that this has been a core part of my being forever. When I went to home care, you know, back in 2001, while I was coming out of consulting with the folks on financial services, part of the appeal to me, a very significant part of the appeal to me, and I think this is true of most people in healthcare, as you mentioned there, mm-hmm. was the idea that I would be able to do good while doing well. And you know, I actually wrote a graduate school essay on it. One of the things I did in graduate school was I focused on social entrepreneurship. This is a dream come true. Like this is it's a socially focused entrepreneurial, you know, venture backed company. It's all of those very exciting things. And, you know, good and good, right? Good and across the board are aligned here. When home team is successful, it means that patients' lives are better, caregivers' lives are better, the delivery system is functioning more effectively. Like it's wringing waste out of the system in places where, you know, it needs to be done. And it's dealing with demographic problems, it's dealing with social problems. It feels really, really good. It's kind of addictive.
Cool. So Home Team is one of the startups in the industry that has raised a lot of venture capital, as you just mentioned. And at the time, it really sort of put the industry on notice that technology will probably play a more disruptive role. So do you see Home Team as a disruptor? Is that your impression? And what differentiates Home Team from the other home care companies that are operating in markets?
I do see us as a disruptor. And what differentiates us is that we have taken a focus on outcomes. You know, caregiver, patient, provider, we've looked at this from the delivery system. Whereas the vast majority of agencies that I've worked with, while, you know, very much oriented towards quality and good people and, you know, hearts in the right places, they are focused on fee-for-service volume. In fact, most of the delivery system is not just home care. The vast majority of the delivery system is still focused on volume. And we are a pure play value-oriented provider. And I think it would be hard to find many others that are, you know, really doing that. Mm-hmm. And that will disrupt things. You know, when I was on the plan side, when I was at Remedy, I was looking for a group like Home Team, and not finding, you know, very many that were there. So I love that I'm getting to build it.
And of course, we've talked a little bit about already the business model has changed over time.
I want to just pause real quick because sure. One of the other things that you mentioned there is critically important. The technology element to this, the real-time data element to this. Like one of the lessons that I have from Remedy is the importance of being at the decision point. Remedy was very, very good about knowing when the decisions were made about next site of care, when the decisions were made about length of stay, the types of things that you need in order to to write Size of Medicare episode. And we are at the decision point for when you go to the ER. We are at the decision point for when a hospitalization is going to occur. So like, and that's through our technology, that's through our data, and through our operating structure. That is probably the most disruptive element, is that we're there, and we're there in a low cost manner, at the point in time when it occurs, mm-hmm. which is something that, you know, hopefully intuitively makes sense to just about anybody.
Right. So I want to kind of go through the home team of yesterday versus the home team of today. What has been behind that shift from the private pay to the dual eligible side?
Sure. So what I would say is that while there's a perception of it as a shift, it's really not. Home team started off when Josh founded it with an idea, again, of creating that great experience for patients and providers. And while there was an initial foray into the private pay world, over the subsequent years, they, you know, started working with the partially capitated managed long-term care plans. We picked up, you know, full dual eligible plans. So there were at the end of last year, there were actually three distinct business lines. And what we as a team decided, you know, this predates me, but what we as a team decided was that we cannot responsibly and effectively, our service quality will deteriorate if we try and do all three of those at once, because there's different competencies. Private pay is a great business. There's, you know, providers in there that are doing well, and it's a needed space. Manage long-term care, you know, being a provider that services that partially capitated, you have to have a different orientation than we do, but that's a large market. It's an important market. There are providers that need to focus on that. So when we looked at what we built, we said, what's our highest best use? Are we, you know, most appropriate to provide, you know, delightful care on a private pay basis? We're creating an awful lot of value on the, you know, potentially avoided hospitalization side through our interventions. Maybe not. Are we the right group? Should we put all of our energies in terms of the volume side of this, you know, servicing the long-term care companies and long-term care supports and services plans? And again, because we have this orientation towards improving the clinical outcomes, it didn't feel like that was the right fit. We built out this machine and this data and, you know, this orientation towards the outcomes. So the natural place, the place where we thought it made the most sense for us to focus, was on plans that have medical risk. So we made a very tough decision to divest ourselves of those two other lines to become focused on this one in particular. And, you know, the notion there is what we've built works best there. We have the greatest market opportunity there. And as a result, you know, that's where we're going.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And there might be some other opportunities down the line on that side. I know we touched briefly on the Medicare Advantage covering the non-skilled home care in 2019. So how are you thinking about that opportunity for Home Team?
So I think of that opportunity. So when I talk about the managed care side, I'm including mm-hmm. Medicare Advantage plans, dual eligible plans, which are a subset of Medicare Advantage plans, you know, retiree plans, anybody that's dealing with a you know, population that's aging in place. I think it's an enormous opportunity. I think that, and again, I was interviewed recently, so you may have seen some of this, that the question here is not about whether or not our intervention makes sense. It's if you offer that benefit, what does it do to the profile of the plan? That's what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. So my impression is that health plans today are evaluating the extent to which offering non-medical home care as a benefit will be financially beneficial to their plan overall, not just to the patients that we service. And actuaries are going to study that. Some plans, without a doubt, are going to pick it up. You know, it's going to be based on the profile of that plan. My instinct here, I'm not an actuary, and obviously I'm a true believer in what we're doing, so couldn't get a whole lot more biased than my view on this, is that the adverse selection components of this are probably more imagined than real. And, you know, the reason for that are several fold. One, for this population, sort of intuitively, you would be selecting a population that seeks to avoid unnecessary care and receive their care in lower cost outpatient settings. Mm-hmm. As a former plan operator, while I'd want my actuaries, of course, to validate that, my gut tells me that those are people that you want in your plan. Two, these are people that are going to inherently be more connected to the healthcare system than other populations, which therefore makes them better in control, right? Less likely to inappropriately access care. So again, from a health plan perspective, while it almost is counterintuitive because you're talking about people that are users of care, mm-hmm. which, you know, might make it sound like that's going to be financially
right expensive
disadvantageous for a plan. The reality is within the Medicare system, Medicare Advantage is in fact a risk adjusted population. So a high control population, meaning accessing care in the right way with good providers that are seeing them, all things that Home Team would enable. If they're selecting your plan, I suspect there actually may be a benefit to having members that we serve in your plan as opposed to the other way around. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that will happen is that the duals population already exists within non-dual eligible SNPs. Does that make sense in terms of what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So said simply, just because you have dual eligibility, you're eligible for Medicare and Medicaid, you've got choice like anyone else. You are not required to join a dual eligible special needs plan. You can join any plan or no plan at all. So many dual eligibles have joined non-dual eligible plans. So I think what will happen is that the first way that plans will attempt this is that they're going to apply it against the dual eligibles that they have in their traditional plans, because then they don't actually have to offer it as a supplemental benefit, but they can still access it. Mm-hmm. And then that'll generate a proof of concept. They'll be able to have some comparative information, see what the impact of that membership is. And once that membership impact is proven to be favorable, I think you'll see more pick it up. Mm-hmm. I suspect it's going to be light this year because the announcement came out so late that plans didn't have a chance to study it. But I happened to have a conversation with a friend of mine, an actuary who in fact is studying it. And he thinks that plans are going to be looking at it meaningfully for, in the fall and for the following plan year. Some plans probably are going to bid it this year, but it came out so late, it's going to be, plans that really understand the space. And adoption, like any supplemental benefit, adoption takes time.
Mm-hmm. What is the role for home care as plans are thinking about this and adopting this in the next couple of years? I mean, they've really got to think like the payer now, or really prove, I think, the finances, even though you're saying there's not a ton of adverse on the finance side, but the home care side really needs to prove the value, I think.
Yeah. So the way that the health plans work, there's patient level value and then there's plan level value. And again, could geek out on this for a while, so I'm going to try not to. We as home team and as home care providers are going to need to demonstrate that we can think more broadly about the delivery system, to your earlier point, mm-hmm. and that we understand how our actions create savings or costs for our payers. So it's changing from that volume to value orientation. At the same point in time, we need to understand how a health plan looks at its overall population and says, how do you fit within our population health strategy? And again, that broader participation in the delivery system. So, again, 13,000 or so home care agencies out there. Many are very small, and they're going to continue to have a sort of niche business based around the relationships that they have. Larger ones that are going to specialize, just like every industry, right? So home care is going through an evolution right now. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to look significantly different in 5 years, where you're going to have specialists like us. You're going to have, folks that focus primarily on the private pay side. You're going to have folks that focus on, you know, transitional care, skilled and intermittent. So I think people are going to have to figure out where they're specializing, where they fit within the population health continuum, because that is clearly something that the delivery system is evolving to understand. One of the analogies that people use is healthcare is kind of like a balloon. You know, you squeeze one part, it pops out somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, what payers, because they have a global risk, are trying to do is figure out how to compress that entire balloon so it just doesn't pop everywhere else. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to figure out what our part is in that. Mm-hmm. And home team, we know what we're doing, and you know, we know where we're focusing. But I think all of the providers out there, and again, this is bigger than just a home care thing. This is across the board. You know, this is the, you know, academic medical centers, the community hospitals, the skilled nursing facilities. Everybody has to figure out how do they contribute to the value equation.
Mm-hmm. Right. So beyond this,
what their other approaches, if they're going to be, you know, entirely fee for service oriented, what justifies that?
Right. So beyond the sort of payer provider evolution that's going on, I'm curious what else is new and exciting to you out there in the healthcare space on the technology side. I know we've talked about it a lot being a big part of the disruption, but what maybe is any new developments for Home Team, or what gets you excited when you're looking at?
Yeah, so I love the idea of, you know, supporting informal caregivers and integrating information from, you know, remote and patient monitoring. You know, the more data that we have flowing through our machine, the better it is at identifying intervention opportunities. And, you know, what we've built is something that by definition is intended for folks that have, you know, low levels of training. You know, it's non-medical caregivers. We can integrate information, future state, right? Imagine a world in which, if you've ever dealt with this from a personal level, imagine a world in which, you know, when you go and visit your grandmother or whomever, you know, you can fill out that same assessment that the caregiver does and provide that information. Or your grandmother can actually fill that information out on herself, mm-hmm. and be supported by this same platform. I think that's very, very cool. And, you know, you bring in the additional, you know, data points from the various devices now that can, you know, provide information. It creates a integrated system for avoiding unnecessary complications, you know, really feeling safe and confident, and again, being able to focus on the important things like getting Chinese food at the mall.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And I know I've asked you this before, but what is the future state for Home Team? What's your vision for the future of Home Team?
So my future state vision for Home Team is that our offering becomes the platform for convening care in the home. That, you know, it starts earlier on, and, you know, a health plan understands the benefits of connecting somebody with care when they start to have, you know, signs of chronic illness, you know, and says, hey, listen, we'd like to get you connected with Home Team. You know, here's an application that you can download. You know, it's going to sync to your Apple Watch or, you know, whatever. And then as somebody begins to age in place and additional services are needed, we can bring those services to them in the home through partners. You know, like, I'm not going to become a device delivery person. I'm not going to become a hospital at home. I'm not going to become, you know, home visiting physician practice. Those are things that I don't intend for us to become. Mm-hmm. But we can become, you know, the individual that is convening those services. And then when they start to be, you know, unable to manage on their own, you know, aging is inevitable. It doesn't have to be terrible, but aging is inevitable. So when somebody needs more services, that, you know, then you would have our caregiver come in, and, you know, ultimately when end of life starts to occur, that, again, end of life is unnecessarily awful for so many people. You know, like, again, if you've ever seen it in your own personal life, hospice is not a bad thing. It's a very good thing. Palliative is a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. They give people high quality life right until the end. that we can enable, you know, timely and appropriate identification of those type of care models as well. So, you know, if I think about what we're doing as, you know, sort of the final 4 to 6 years of life, maybe even a little bit further than that, if you've got people who are able to be identified early enough on, that you get to have a really high quality end of life experience, and don't have to go through, you know, the awfulness that so many other folks do, because the home has become an effective place to do it, and that we're the platform that's making that possible.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, I think my last question is just beyond being a chief executive of home care and supporting in-home caregivers, what do you like to do for fun? What else can we know about Randy Klein?
Randy Klein loves the outdoors and spends his weekends in the mountains as much as he can. I am a ski race coach during the winter, and you know, like cycling and hiking, and you know, I've got three kids, and you know, my wife, and that's how we pass our time. So every chance we get, we're out there.
Very cool. Have you ever gone sailing?
Love sailing. I aspire to one day be a sailor, but with school age kids and everything else going on, that's going to have to wait.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Cool.
Are you a sailor?
I am a sailor, yeah. And I'm
where are you based out of?
Chicago, so on Lake Michigan.
Ah, I grew up originally before Rochester in Lincoln Park.
No way. Okay.
Yeah, I went to Parker and Waldorf.
Okay, cool. I have some friends who went to Parker.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, my parents had a boat when I was really, really little.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually taking off on Saturday for an overnight boat trip. Should be fun, to Waukegan, Illinois.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah, it's the Great Lakes are great. Like, it's so funny to say, but like, I love being on the Great Lakes. There's nothing like, you talk to people about fresh water and they think about ponds and like these little things, and they all crave the salt water. But if you've ever experienced the Great Lakes, like, they are so beautiful and they're huge, they're inland seas, and you know, you don't feel disgusting getting out of it like you do from salt water. Not that there's anything wrong with salt water. I love it here, but you know, would one day love to be able to spend more time on the Great Lakes.
Yeah, and what people don't get when you talk about Chicago is it has beaches. You know, it looks like the ocean, but
Chicago is such a great town. Yeah, on the coasts. So, like, I grew up on the Great Lakes between Chicago and Rochester. They it's flyover country. They're like, boy, I've never made it to Chicago. I'm like, it's the third largest city in the country. You might want to try it sometime.
Yeah, they've got to get a clue.
And on top of that, it might be the best summer city, right?
Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah, that's what I say. I've heard this joke. This is probably a bad joke. I probably will take this off the recording. But there's a Chicago comedian I heard who described it as like an abusive relationship where you have to explain Chicago away in the winter. Like, no, he's not always this bad. You should see him in the summer.
That's really, really funny. Yeah. And it's a pretty city. So mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Chicago.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. Very nice.